Well, good morning. Thank you. Another sellout crowd at Brentwood Park Lions Church. The wonders of technology is we could be sold out and we have no idea that we are. Isn't that great? It occurs to me as I got ready for this week and looked at the theme and topic that I was going to talk about today was that we are a restless and stressed out culture. We're totally kind of out to lunch on so many things these days, and you would think that with things being shut down, there'd be so much time to rest and relax that we would be less stressed out, but it seems that we are more stressed out than ever. Life in this city actually seems never to come to some kind of standstill or stop, even no matter what's taking place around us. In fact, having lived away from the city for a little while and then coming back to visit while we were living away, I realized that there's a certain spirit about Vancouver, and it's a spirit of hurry and busyness and rushing around from place to place. And what I found was even when I came in here on vacation, I'd be driving around. I had all the time in the world. But before you know it, I was kind of rat racing with everybody cutting in and out of traffic. And I thought, what am I doing? This is really stupid. Mind you, I think it's stupid anyway, but because you're risking all kinds of accidents and all kinds of problems. But there's this contagious spirit of stress and restlessness and rushing and hurry and busyness that just permeates the whole aspect of our city. And I suspect that those of you listening in right now are infected by this and you don't even realize it. You probably don't even stop to think about it, but you live marginless lives. You are infected by the hurry sickness because you're overly busy and overly stressed by it. Some of us can remember far enough back, perhaps it's a distant memory for us, that to a time when the city would actually shut down for a day, that commercial activity was at least shut down and totally shut down and closed off. Malls were closed, stores were closed. About the only thing you'd find open was like a 7-Eleven and maybe a gas station. And that was really about it. You found coffee shops and restaurants open for a little while. But really, if you wanted anything else, we'd go to the pagans across the border, right? We'd go down to Blaine and Bellingham and do our shopping on Sunday down there. And then I think it was roughly about 1985, is that the Lord's Day Act was struck down in court, been to Supreme Court, as being an infringement on the freedom of conscience and religion by people and by our new charter rights that infringed on people's conscience, freedom of conscience and religion to choose for themselves. Stores, interestingly enough, commercially didn't start opening up right away. In fact, I suspect that there was a lot of the commercial side, especially the retail side, that were quite thankful for the Lord's Day Act because they were, what they saw now happening is an increase of their cost of running a store, running a place, because now they had to staff it, they had to open it up, and there wasn't necessarily the same assurance that the marketing and their income would go up proportionally. But here we are, how many years later, 35, 36 years later, and Sunday has become a day like any other day in the week. Not only do we now work longer hours than ever before, and research recently showed that already, even before the pandemic, there was a tremendous increase in the amount of hours that were being spent in paid employment to the tune of the fact that about 25% of those who worked were in the workforce were actually spending more than 10 hours or more a day working. So not only have we increased in terms of the amount of hours that we spend on the job, in employment, but ironically, you would think that now working from home, that number would go down, but actual fact, it's gone up. That there's about at least a third of those who work from home spend more than 8 hours now on the job, and over half of those working from home now work weekends. something they never did when they went into the job, when they were going into the office a little bit over a year ago. 33% of people researched here in this survey said that they're simply running, in their expression, running out of steam. 36% of women and 31% of men said they were reaching that point of stress and burnout, that they're having greater feelings of these things. I think particularly so because they're trying to balance perhaps working from home with already homeschooling kids, and the stress and the tension of when you go out, are you going to get sick? Are you going to catch anything? Our stress levels have increased dramatically. There's a fallout to this, and the fallout was already being felt before the pandemic, by the way, and that is the amount of time that was being spent by parents with children in the family at home was dropping significantly, and had dropped to about an average of about less than 3.5 hours a day was being spent by parents with their children, and that, I believe that was children of all ages. All of this means that we are living life, whether we realize it or not, at an increased pace, with greater stress and greater restlessness. And compounding the problem is that so many who feel that they have reached that kind of point where they need a break, but they feel like they can't afford to take a break or take any time off. So perhaps now more than any other time, we need to consider and reconsider again this whole practice of Sabbath. And that's what I want to talk about today. So let me ask you a question, a searching question for you to answer straight up for yourself. You're not going to be asked to share that with anybody else, just straight up. Are you tired and worn out right now? Are you tired from living a life that perhaps doesn't have margin? Constantly chasing after the clock, hurrying from one thing to the next, never quite feeling that your work is finished at the end of a day or even at the end of a week. How about this one? When is the last time you truly felt rested? I mean, I don't mean you had a good night's sleep. I mean rested. You felt energized to meet the day. You got up in the morning and you felt, isn't it good to be alive? And you breathed in the fresh air and you had that sense about you that enjoyed the day. You could hear the birds singing out in the trees. And you felt rested, like all is well. I, quite honestly, for myself, straight up, have a hard time remembering that time. I think I'd probably have to go back about 3 years to when I was basically forced to rest. And isn't that the truth for many of us, is that we don't rest until we are forced to be flat on our back and rest? And recovering from heart surgery, I found myself for a period of at least 2 months basically housebound, not even able to drive, not able to do absolutely anything. And let me tell you, daytime TV is really bad. And it was way too early in the year for the World Cup to have come on. So it was really boring. I slept, and I think after a few weeks of that, I began to actually feel rested. Sadly, that all kind of comes to an end when you start going back to work. And actually, after about 2-3 months of that, I was feeling more stressed by not working than I was feeling if I would have gone back on the job. But when have you felt truly rested? I think that's where Sabbath comes in, where we need to listen and learn from Jesus and from Scripture what it means to really practice Sabbath. I see Sabbath is God's antidote to our restless living in our time. And it's essential to those of us who see ourselves as followers of Jesus and are looking and striving to live the Jesus way. Now, I got to confess that while for the most part I preach and teach on things that I have been learning to put into practice in my life, I got to be honest that this is one that I have failed at quite miserably and probably only been able to apply in my life in a somewhat incomplete manner in what really truly means to practice Sabbath. See, I think when I came into ministry, I bought into a couple lies. The first one I learned pretty quickly that I wasn't going to be true, and it's not that I knew they were lies, it's just that I felt this passion of calling into ministry, and like so many others that have gone into ministry in different ways, and some of you who volunteer and you go into different areas, man, you're going to save people, you're going to save the world, you're just going to make this fantastic difference in somebody's life. And I had to learn that I don't save anybody, neither do you, by the way, that it's Jesus who saves people. And in fact, I have no control over people's decisions. I realize that every day, every Sunday I get up to preach, is I can pour out my heart and my energy and everything that I've put into getting ready for today. And really when it comes down to it, it's up to you who are listening to decide if you're going to do anything about it. And here I suspect this is the painful realization I've come to often at the end of the day, is I suspect many of you, perhaps most of you, listen and say, well, that's interesting. And you walk away, and within about 72 hours, you've forgotten everything that's been we've talked about, and nothing's different in your life. At least I don't hear anything differently from you, so I'm left assuming that sometimes you're left unchanged. I want you to know that's not my fault. It's not my problem. It's actually yours. Because I believe that no matter who's speaking, that God's Spirit speaks into your life. And when God speaks to us, we have a choice to make. We either respond in a positive way, or our heart becomes hardened. And the sad reality of a hardened heart is eventually you stop hearing God speak into your life. So I hope today you hear God speak. I think today's what we're going to talk about today applies to all of us, at least most of us, need to learn this and don't do a very good job of practicing it. I think of Jesus when he looked out and saw people, and he looked out and he saw the people, the crowds, and he looked at them as being harassed and helpless as sheep without a shepherd. I got to be honest, I got to say, I know many of your lives, and I see your lives as being harassed and helpless, and you desperately for your own well-being and those around you need to learn to practice Sabbath. I say, when I came into ministry, I thought, you know, I'm still learning this after close to 30 years of being a pastor, that I just would just take one day off a week. And in fact, you know what? These lies that we believed about ourselves as pastors, I think the churches believe it out and facilitate those lies. You want us to save people, and you want us to be the ones who do the work. So we quite willingly step up on that pedestal and oblige. And I've discovered along the way that if you take one day off a week, you can't take a Sabbath. Because a Sabbath is not a day off. It's something very different, as we'll find out. But perhaps, and I suspect this is true for many of us as well, you don't have a true understanding, a biblical concept of what Sabbath is, because some of us have grown up in a kind of a legalistic background where, you know, there was this observance of, quote, the Lord's Day. And the most thing that comes back to us, hey, I grew up in that kind of culture, and as a kid, the memories that come back to me is one of boredom and being left out. And hey, that was the last thing I wanted to do. I remember wanting to play soccer on Saturdays, but that was those kinds of activities were on Sundays, but that was a forbidden thing to do. And so what you do, you're bored. And I'll tell you, it was worse yet when we actually came and lived for about a year in Canada at different times, and then we had to go visit people. And then you just sit around in somebody's living room. And I discovered in Canada, living rooms aren't really living rooms because they're guest rooms, actually. The only time you use living rooms is when you have guests over. And then you get to sit on the plastic on the couches, you know, and kind of squirm around on it and sweat. And it's boring. Like as a child, please, if you go visiting, let your kids play. Let your kids do something. So we have all these lousy memories of what it meant to be do nothing on a Sunday. And so Sabbath is the last thing we want to practice. But it is the thing that absolutely we need to. I'm convinced this, and I'll jump into this in a minute here, but I'm convinced this. If we practice a true Sabbath, I believe it would deal with most of the significant issues that we face in our lives and in the world today. I think we would live healthier lives, not only spiritually, but physically and mentally and emotionally. I think we would be better equipped to handle those areas of conflict in our lives. We would be able better to navigate the different tragedies and problems that come up in our lives that we go through. But the truth is that very few of us, if any of us, practice true Sabbath. So let's look at it and see what it's all about. Need to get back to the where it shows up in the Ten Commandments. And just kind of take a look there. I want you to, we're going to be looking at where it shows up first in Exodus chapter 20. But I want to look at the context because we need to understand the context in which these commandments were given to understand what purpose they serve and how significant they were in the lives of Israel and are meant to be in our lives today. So what we have is they show up in Exodus 20, but what we have happened to is the Israelites up until that point where they show up here, where they're given the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai, is that they have been rescued from Egypt. God has pulled them out of captivity under the leadership of Moses. They've seen all kinds of phenomenal things happening, like showing up at the Red Sea and seeing the Red Sea part so that they could get across and Pharaoh and his armies are wiped out. Then they've gone out and they're already kind of negotiating their route through the wilderness on their way to the promised land. But, you know, like you and I so often, you know, God does a wonderful thing in our lives and we feel exhilarated by it. And then some time goes by and what happens? We start complaining. And so before long, you find the Israelites grumbling and complaining to Moses and say, you should have left us in Egypt because we at least had meat and we had bread to eat back there. We have nothing out here in the wilderness. Lord God hears their complaint and Moses talks to God and God says, well, tomorrow, I said, there will be, when they get up in the morning, there will be manna. There will be something that kind of come down. And they can pick that up, what they need for the day. And in the evening, there will be quail. They can take enough of that and they can eat for the day, but they're not supposed to take more than what is for the day. I think here's the lesson in God providing our daily bread. And so that's what happened. Some of you have kind of manna for dinner almost often, quite often. You know what manna means? It means, what is it? I think your kids ask that question almost like, look at, you know, you put something out on the table, a casserole of something, what is it? And you're eating manna, just next time they ask that question, you say, it's manna. It's something that God gave the Israelite seed as well. While they get along the way, they complain some more because there's not enough water. Moses hits a rock and out comes a pouring stream of water. They're witnessing all kinds of phenomenal ways that God is providing for them, but they keep grumbling and complaining. In the third month, okay, now they've been on the road for about 3 months, they reach Mount Sinai. And that's where Moses has this encounter with God, and God gives them the Ten Commandments. And the purpose here is kind of caught up in the statement. He says, I'm setting you apart as a nation that will be holy unto me. In other words, through them, he was forming a nation that would fulfill the promise that he had given so many years ago to Abraham, that out of him he would create a nation out of which the whole world, all nations, would be blessed. They needed to be shaped into nation. They'd been living in Egypt. They had not only been slaves, but they had been living somewhat pagan lives as well. They were long since removed from anything worshiping the God of Abraham. They were probably, you know, very much into even the Egyptian sort of different kind of religious aspects of worship. They needed to go through this experience to be refined as God's people from which God could complete his purposes. And so he sets out before them these Ten Commandments as part of forming them and shaping them into the people of God. Just an idle question. Can you list all the Ten Commandments? I suspect most people can't. They probably can at least list them in order. They can kind of come up with maybe half of them. The first three have to do with God. You can have no other gods before me, God says. Don't create any other images or idols that you worship instead of me. You can only follow me and worship me only. The last six have to do with how they relate with each other. Honor your father and your mother. It's the first one with the promise. You notice, I emphasize this to my kids. You know, it's the one commandment with the promise that it'll go well for you. It's interesting that right after that one comes, thou shalt not murder. I think that's probably directed to parents and children alike. Because aren't there some times when you think, yeah, I could do something here. Thou shalt not murder. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wife or your neighbor's possessions. Give false witness against your neighbor. Number four in this is separating these three that have to do with God and these six that have to do with dealing with your neighbor, with those people around you, is this the one that's called remember the Sabbath, observe the Sabbath, keep the Sabbath. I think that's significant because it becomes a bridge from dealing with God to dealing with people, and it brings these two things together. Remember, Jesus summarized the whole law by saying, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And Sabbath brings these two things together. Interesting that along with the second commandment about not having any idols other than and not worshiping anything else other than God, because God says, I'm a jealous God, this is the only other commandment that gives a basis or reason for it. And in Exodus, it brings us back to creation. It says, for in 6 days God created the earth, and on the seventh day rested. And we're going to come to that. We're going to look at that a little bit closer. Good to look at what Jesus had to say in terms of relation with the law, because often when we start talking about the Ten Commandments, I hear people saying, well, we don't live under the law anymore. We live under grace. And I'm thinking, yeah, but it's still good not to commit murder. And it's still probably good not to commit adultery. It's good not to steal. It's probably good not to lie about your neighbor. And it's probably good not to covet. So I think we should keep these things anyway. What I find interesting about most of us, okay, I would say most of us, is that we don't have a problem with keeping 9 out of 10. But we seem to give ourselves permission to willingly violate the fourth commandment about keeping the Sabbath. You know, I think, as a pastor, I think if I killed somebody, or if I committed adultery, or I stole from the church, or wasn't really kind of honoring to God in my preaching the way I was, I don't think I'd have a job for very long. But you know, I've gone close to 30 years and not generally kept the Sabbath the way I think it should. By the way, neither have you probably. Nobody's asked me about that. Nobody said, Don, how's it going with your Sabbath keeping? And as far as I know, I don't know of a pastor who's been fired for not keeping the Sabbath. In fact, often we're probably some of the worst violators because we just take that one day off, and God knows that when you only have one day off and you still, albeit some people don't believe this, we still have another life out there with looking after family and kind of mowing the lawn and washing the car and doing some chores around the house and doing some shopping. And if you only have one day off, what do you think you do on that day? You're not doing some Sabbath keeping, that's for sure. Well, what did Jesus had to say about this? Well, first thing he had to say was that he didn't come to abolish the law. So right there, he kind of laid to rest that right at the beginning of his ministry, because I think people thought, oh, great, you know, we get to come out from under the law. He said, I came to fulfill the law. And I think in Jesus, we see somebody, when he says to fulfill the law, he's showing us how to live out the law in a way that is not about being legalistic about the whole approach to how you do that. In Mark chapter 2, verses 3, he talks about how Sabbath was made for man, not man for Sabbath. And I think that's an important understanding to keep in mind, that God didn't impose the Sabbath on us. He invites us to keep the Sabbath because it's in our best interest. Sometimes we think God commands things in order to wreck our lives, in order to be the party pooper in our lives, to spoil our fun. But the reality is that God brings commandments out because life works a whole lot better when we follow these principles, these policies. It's kind of like when you buy a car. I mean, it's good to change oil once in a while. It's not the manufacturer's job if you never change oil and the car breaks down. It's not the manufacturer's problem if you never put gas in the car and all of a sudden it's not running. You need to look after it. And I think God says, you know, here's what you need to do to look after yourself. I created you. Now you look after yourself. Matthew 11:28, Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. And he's speaking to those who are burdened down by keeping the law in a legalistic way, including the Sabbath. And he's saying, come to me and I will give you rest. I will give you rest from all of that weight that you carry. You're weighed down by too many things. Come to me and experience the rest. That, I believe, is what is behind this commandment, the fourth commandment about keeping the Sabbath. So I want to read it from Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11. We're going to kind of take it apart a little bit to see how that works out. And then I want to talk about, just briefly at the end, some practical ways in which you can begin implementing that in your life. Remember the Sabbath, God says. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work, not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and made it holy. So let's dig a little bit deeper here and just see what God is saying here. When he says, remember, this is the only commandment where God begins by saying, remember. I think there's a reason behind that. I think there's a tendency for us to forget about this aspect, as we seem to have anyway. But that whole word to remember has that sense, not in a sense of passive memory. You know, sometimes when my family gets together and we sit back and we remember things, we have memories, we share memories about what it was like growing up, what it was like when we were with our parents, what it was like in this particular, and it's basically a sharing of memories out of which really nothing kind of comes out of it. But when God says remember, it has a sense of pay close attention to this memory, remember this thing and put it into practice. Don't just have a passive memory about it. Remember the Sabbath. Don't forget about it. Israel had a strong tendency to forget things about what God had done for them. Witness just a few examples that we've talked about here, just between those 3 months between leaving Egypt and arriving at Mount Sinai. But in Deuteronomy, which I think is kind of like Moses' memoirs, at the end where he's going over things, God is saying through Moses to the people, when you come into the land that you're about to come into, it's a land flowing with milk and honey. You're going to prosper. You're going to build your houses. You're going to plant your fields. You're going to enjoy all the fruit of your labor. Don't forget me. Guess what they did? They forgot God. Isn't that so true about our lives? You see, when things are going bad, you know, when we're down and out, when things are, we're financially broken, things, we don't know where the next dollar, when, how to pay the next bill, pay the rent, put the food on the table. When we find ourselves sick and not sure how this is all going to work itself out, we cry out to God, God, where are you? But when things are going good, when, you know, you have that job that is paying the bills, more than paying the bills, you get to put money away, you get to plan that vacation that you have always wanted to go, you get to buy that new car, we tend to forget God, don't we? We tend to sit back. And God says, remember, remember me. Remember the things I'm telling you. And act on these memories. It also includes that sense of making it audible, of speaking it out. Now, Israel was very much a oral tradition nation. And the way things were handed down, it wasn't through writing. They didn't have a Bible that was written out. It was through oral tradition. And in Deuteronomy, Moses also already says, teach your children these things. And it's about making these memories audible. It's talking about those things that God, the things that God has done and God has worked. And here God is saying, remember and remind others. We need to be reminding each other about these things and about, particularly about this commandment. Reminding ourselves, but not only ourselves, but others. Then he takes, God takes you back. He says, for in 6 days the Lord made. Takes us back and anchors Sabbath keeping in creation itself. And so if we go back into the account of creation that's found in Genesis chapter 1, I don't care how you read that, whether you read it literally or you read it metaphorically, it doesn't matter. There's a teaching principle here that we need to kind of apply when it comes to how this works out in our lives. By the way, the Bible is never meant to be a science textbook. The Bible never sets out to prove the existence of God. The Bible just assumes the existence of God. The Bible starts out by saying, in the beginning, God. In other words, in the beginning, God was already there. And it, you accept that kind of premise that right by faith right from the start. And so God creates. And that's what chapter 1 of Genesis, it's this hymn of praise to the Creator of God. And there's this kind of refrain, this rhythm that goes through the whole account. And it gets through the 6 days of creation, and then it reaches the verse where it says, by the seventh day God had finished the work he had been doing. Now there isn't the sense that God had finished his work and then pulled back and didn't do anything anymore. You know, there's some that kind of have a deistic a belief in God, that God kind of wound everything up, put everything, got everything in motion, and then he sits back and he's uninvolved in his creation. That is not what this is saying here. God finished what he had been doing in the creative power. And Jesus later on, when he came, he says, my Father is always at work, and so am I. In other words, God is still at work in his creation. And part of it is in creating along the way as well. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. God rested. Was God tired? I don't think so. I don't think that's the implication here of what rest is all about. See, I think we have it backwards. You see, we work and then we rest. Because we rest because we're tired. But if you look at the way God created and see his plan for human life. What day did he create? Does this hymn of praise say he created human life? day six. What does he do on day seven? He rests. For all you type A people that are functional and kind of out there, go get it. This would just frustrate you no end. I don't know what Adam was like, but you know, God creates Adam. And says, take a break. It's kind of like when one of the jobs I had in working in graveyards at a mill. And I realized that the only reason they kept that graveyard shift on is because it cost too much to shut the dryers down and start them back home up at the end of the day. And they really didn't care about productivity. And so I started my job, and about 20 minutes later, somebody came up and says, can break. I said, I just started. It doesn't matter. Get out of here. Go for a can break. Go for a smoke. I said, I don't smoke. Go for a break. Get out of here. And I realized that we were shut down more than we were We didn't work. We rested more than we worked. And I think sometimes that's how you feel about these things. But the biblical approach to work is that you work out of rest instead of rest from work. And I just have to point to the way the Jewish day worked itself out. We think the day starts in the morning. And so we get up in the morning, we have breakfast, and we begin our day. Isn't that what we say? For the Jews, for Israelites, the day started in the evening at sundown. And so, what a better way to get ready for the day in front of you than to have a relaxing meal at home, a relaxing evening, have a good night's sleep, and you work out a rest. See, I think we have it backwards, and that's why we miss the point on what rest is all about. God rested. Can I just speak those words into your life for a few minutes here? Let that sink in. God rested. And just think of your life. And I know right now somebody's saying, yeah, but you don't know my schedule. I got to get the kids off to school. I got to go do this. Then I got to go drive over here. I got to do this job. I got to go here. I got to do some shopping. God rested. Well, I'm a single mom and I got all kinds of kids. God rested. God rested. See, the word there that is rested is where we get our word Sabbath from, God Shavuot. God's Sabbath. And it has the significance to cease activity, to cease striving, to just let go, and to sit back. I think there's something here that God is trying to teach us in this commandment, and in taking us back to creation, what he's trying to say here to you and to me about the importance of practicing Sabbath and learning how to take one day a week for rest is to say, this is something that he's woven into the fabric of creation. This is a rhythm of life that is as much a part of life, as much a law of life, if you like, as the law of gravity. How many of you are thinking right now, define the law of gravity and jumping off a four-story building? Now, I realize that for some that may not be such a, you know, there's people who out of depression do things like that. I'm not meant to make any kind of mockery out of that. But the reality is, there's the law of gravity we don't really want to defy, but we defy this law all the time. And it's absolutely essential to your better health, to your physical health, to your spiritual health, to your mental health, to your emotional health. I believe that when God takes us back and giving this commandment, and he says, observe the Sabbath, listen back to creation, that the need for rest here, for Sabbath, is something that's woven right into the fabric of creation, and you violate that and defy it to your own peril, and most of us do. See, Sabbath is an invitation to simply stop what you are doing, to sit back and enjoy life, because it has this element, and the Jewish rabbis would teach us that there's an element of delight in this in Sabbath and what it means. That God sat back and delighted himself in what he had accomplished, And I can see that when we look back in Genesis, because all the way through, every day, at the end of the day, God looks at what he accomplished that day, and he said, it was good. But you know what he says when he gets to the end of the sixth day? It says, God looked at all that he had created, and what does he say? He says, it was very good. Let me just kind of put that in maybe an analogy that maybe you'll kind of grab onto. Some of you are gardeners. I like playing around in the garden. I like, you know, it's that time of the year where we start cleaning up our deck and start looking at what we're going to plant in our little planters out there. I have some vegetables and I got to put some flowers in. And think of this as a day where you spent the day working there and you've planted everything and you cleaned it all up, and then you go back inside, you take, kind of clean yourself up, and you go back out. I go back out on the deck, and it's a nice sunny day like it is out there today. And I crack open a beer and I sit back and I say, isn't life good? It's a delight. And that delight gets even magnified greater when all of a sudden those flowers start coming up, and there's, you know, geraniums, and there's some million bells, and there's some rock roses, and all of this massive amount of color. It's this delight that takes in the satisfaction of having completed a job and now sitting back and enjoying it. For some of you, maybe it's a clean house. I don't understand all those things, you know, like the cleanliness. I understand cleanliness is not necessarily neatness, just ask my wife. But I realize that for her, having a clean and neat house means that she can sit back and say, and take delight in it. I think God sat back after he'd completed the creation and he took delight in what he saw. Sabbath includes this element of delight. What he does is he blesses the seventh day. And here again, we got to pay close attention to what it means to be blessed and how that word first shows up, because God first blesses animals. He says, he blesses them and says, go out and be fruitful. And then he blesses human beings and he says the same thing. You know, be fruitful. In other words, his blessing is life-giving, life-producing. And here, instead of blessing animals or people or any kind of beings or any kind, he blesses a day. I think there's an implication here that when the day is blessed and when we observe the Sabbath, there's a sense of well-being, and it's a life-giving experience that we have when we begin to experience Sabbath and we begin to observe Sabbath. It's life-giving and life-renewing in us. And then he turns around and he says, and he made it holy. Now, holy means to be set apart for God's purposes, to be sanctified, to be blessed. But there's a contrast here that we can easily miss because, well, we're non-religious and we're not aware of all kinds of other religions, but those who were to whom God was giving this command, they would have understood this very clearly, that the gods of other religions had holy places. There were holy temples. There were holy locations. And the places were holy. But here God has declared a day, a time, as being holy, as being set apart. In other words, you don't need to go to the temple to meet up with God. You don't need to go to a holy place. You don't need to make a pilgrimage to some holy location to meet up with God. By observing a Sabbath, by setting that time aside to Sabbath, to rest, we can experience God and we can meet with God, which is such a significant aspect of what observing the Sabbath is all about. It's not necessarily being in church, although we like, if your Sabbath coincides with a Sunday, that's where we want you to be. But worship and being with God plays an important part in terms of your experience of Sabbath. Well, back to the commandment where he says, you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor even your animals, nor the alien. In other words, give everybody a break. And I remember thinking about this when I was a lot younger, and it troubled me greatly. Because, you see, we would go to church on a Sunday, and, you know, we weren't allowed to, you know, Christians weren't allowed to work on Sundays, and so they respected that. They would show up in church, and after I kind of go home, go to the families. Or, but you know what else we used to, most Christians often do, a lot of Christians often do on Sunday? They go for lunch. And all of a sudden I'm thinking, you know, in order for that restaurant to be open and have somebody serving food, I guess you got to keep a certain amount of people unsaved. You got to keep a certain amount of people pagan, because otherwise, you know, if they take that day off, there's nobody there to serve you food. Is that an essential service? I don't know. Here God says, give everybody a break, even your animals. Let the dog laze around, okay? Don't drag him out for a walk unless he wants to go out. Just kind of let him be lazy. Let the cat jump all over the place and just be a cat. I have a hard time with that one, but we'll deal with it. On Sabbath, we'll deal with the cats. Don't get your kids to serve you. You know, don't even hire somebody to serve you. Give them all a break. Sabbath is for everybody, God says. Not just for God-fearers or God-believers. And that's where I say, Sabbath has the power to change people's lives, even people who pay no credence to the existence of God at all. It still has the power, not nearly as much, as course, I don't think, but it still has that power to save, to transform people's lives. Because I believe woven into our sense of being human is this need, this absolute need that we have to have that day of rest. He says, declare it a Sabbath to the Lord. Dedicate this God to God. And in other words, it needs to include some aspect of worship. Now, we have such a narrow definition of worship. I love worshiping through music, okay? Music is, to me, the language of the soul. And music can move me in the way nothing else can sometimes. And I love engaging in worship. We're fortunate in our church to have had good worship leaders and to good musicians that lead us into God's presence through music. But worship is so much more than singing some song, getting together and singing some songs of praise to God. Worship is actually what you do with your whole life. There is, I believe, inadvertent worship, even by those who don't believe in God, when they stand and look at the majesty of a mountain or look over the ocean and see the power of the breakers and they're struck in awe. I believe that is worship of God. We can worship in different ways. We can go for a walk in it and experience God's creation on the Sabbath and just be filled with a sense of renewal and awe for the awesome God who created the beautiful part of this world that we get to live in. Worship is an important part. Let me finish off. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Sabbath next Sunday. So let me finish off here by just giving some very quick pointers about how we get started, how you can get started on this. I think the first thing I want you to take note, I've already talked about, is Sabbath is not simply another day off. You know, we all have days off, and the weekend rolls around, like Saturday and Sunday roll around, and, you know, you say, thank God it's Friday because tomorrow's Saturday and then there's Sunday, and I got 2 days off. But the reality is that most of us fill our days off with activity of a different kind. It may be fun activity, I'm not saying that, you know, but often at the end of a weekend, you're almost as tired as you were as when you entered the weekend because you've just been doing one thing after another. You've been doing, maybe perhaps on Saturday, you've been doing all the chores and all the different things around the house. And then Sunday you go skiing, you go out there to do this sort of thing. You're not resting. It's not what God has in mind necessarily. in terms of how he used that time. It is more than a day off. It's a day of rest and renewal as well as worship. I've used this before, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but it helps me remember what Sabbath is all about. And I've used the acronym for REST, as it's in your notes there. And the R stands for release. It's giving yourself permission not to do anything. Some of you actually need to give yourself permission to not do anything. You know, we believe a couple of cliches. One I grew up hearing oftentimes was, maybe you can even finish it, idle hands are the tools of the devil, right? And so the principle that's being trying to taught there is you should never be idle. The other one I hear once in a while is, you know, the devil never takes a day off, so why should you? And I'm thinking, now just hang on a minute. I don't think I really want to model my life after the devil, do you? I mean, I think he's the bad guy. I think I want to model my life after Jesus, and it seems to me Jesus observed Sabbath. He took time off. It was a time for healing. He still ministered to people, but he walked through the grain fields with his disciples and kind of snacked on the wheat as they went by and probably just enjoyed hanging out with him. Release. It's letting go of your need to be in control and be in charge. Some of you are control freaks. Not only of your own life, but everybody else's life around you. You need to know what's taking place. You need to have everything in order. It has to follow this kind of plan. Sabbath is throw that agenda out the window. Just do away with it. Release. Enjoyment. It's about kicking back and taking delight in life. Taking delight in God's creation. Taking delight in God's presence. Just being able to sit for a little while in God's presence and enjoy Him. It's delighting in relationships. Your husband or your wife and your children. And just kind of hanging out, enjoying friends. Enjoying the fruit of your labor. Sometimes it's like work, 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 work. And you never have to take the time to enjoy the results of all the hard work that you put in. The S is for stillness. Taking time to simply be quiet, to be still, to cease striving, to be reflective, to listen, to practice, just practice going out some time and sitting for 10, 15 minutes outdoors and listen to the sounds that you hear. Because if you can't sit there that long to listen for those different sounds that you hear, you're probably not very good at also being still and listening for the voice of God to speak into your life either. Thankfulness. The T is for thankfulness. I think if we take time to be more thankful for what we have, we will learn to be content with what we have, as opposed to living out of discontent and the need to strive to get more and more and more. I think rest includes all of these. But if you're going to practice Sabbath, it takes making a decision to do that. Nothing ever happens in your life intentionally unless you make an intentional decision and then make an intentional plan as how that will take place. Everything begins with that decision and a plan. Start where you are. I suspect for most of us, a full 24-hour Sabbath is not going to really work. So start small. Use the concept of the Jewish day. I mean, if your Sabbath is going to go from Saturday over to Sunday, or Friday over to Saturday, start with the evening meal of the day before, what you think is the day before, and plan a relaxing evening, and then you get to sleep. Isn't that a great novel idea? The average person these days doesn't sleep enough. And you know what we end up doing? We end up binge sleeping. And most medical profession, as well as psychologists will tell you, that is the worst thing you can do. Because when you binge sleep and you are up early Monday through Friday and you don't get enough sleep, and then you think, but I'll make up for it on the weekend by sleeping in till 10, 11 o'clock. It's like putting your body through jet lag every week. It's like going to bed in Vancouver and having to wake up in New York. You can't do that. Follow a Sabbath and do this and keep some kind of regularity to your schedule. Start small. Keep it achievable. And start with a shorter version of it and follow the Jewish day if you like. Think about working out of rest as opposed to resting after work. Prepare ahead of time. You know, the Jews had what they called the day of preparation leading up to Sabbath. And in large part, that was because once the Sabbath came around, they didn't cook meals, they didn't do anything. So everything had to be done the day before. Well, you don't have to kind of follow it that strictly, but plan for it and prepare for what you're going to do the day, your day of your Sabbath day. And look at it as a day of fun and enjoyment, not a day of, oh, got to sit back and do nothing. What is it that you enjoy doing? What brings renewal and restoration and refreshment to you? That's what Sabbath is all about. And yes, find that time to spend in God's presence. Find some time to read some scripture, to pray, to sing some songs. If it's your Sabbath is over Sunday, to get together with other followers of Jesus. But Sabbath is so much more than anything just simply, quote, religious. There's a sense of doing what you enjoy that brings renewal in your life. You know, forget diets. Just set those things aside. Eat all the chocolate you want. Have bacon for breakfast. You know, just pig out on it. Because you know what's part of Sabbath is feasting. Begin and end with a feast. And then, okay, the rest of the week, be a little bit more careful. Feasting, enjoy. It's a day for enjoyment as well as anything else. Now, sometimes I hear parents with children saying, but I got young kids. How am I going to do that with them? You know, they don't work. Or I got teenagers. They're not going to be part of it. Here's my suggestion. Invite them to be part of planning it. Maybe not the whole day, but planning a part of it. Let them know that you're going to do something together as a family. This is a day that you're just going to spend together for a few hours. Maybe there's particular games that they like playing. Maybe there's places that they like going. It's a time for rest and renewal of relationships. The problem is, often when we have not spent enough time with our kids during the week or in our regular, we don't know what to do with them when all of a sudden we have time with them. And so that's a learning process as well. Think of it this way. Sabbath is one of those grace-filled habits that will make a difference not only in your life, but in their life. And the habits our kids form at a younger age are habits that are going to carry through them through life as well. Just think about the bad habits that you have in life. When did they form? You were probably not enforced or needed to work against them early enough in life and eventually they got set in stone and it becomes very hard to unlearn habits, especially bad ones. But you now have a chance to turn this into a teaching aspect of teaching them the importance of rest and the importance of how God has created them. There's a lot of aspects of teaching that can take place, but in a very enjoyable way. So start small and grow with it, particularly if this is a new experience. I'm going to bring this one in, and I just want to kind of look back at three things actually that we talked about earlier about a month or so ago. We talked about setting time aside for solitude and silence and prayer. Can I ask, how's it going with that? Was it something that you listened and you did what I talked about before? You just kind of said, oh, that's interesting. And you're going about your life as usual. in solitude and silence, in times of prayer, in those times of solitude and silence, is not really part of your daily practice. Be that as it may, if you found it difficult to practice solitude and silence, moments of solitude and silence in your life, whether it was 5, 10, or 15 minutes at different times in your day, it's going to be difficult at best for you to practice Sabbath. So you may want to back this one up. You may want to even go back and listen to the talks that we did about those things. Not because I think they're such great talks, but because learning to spend time in solitude and silence and prayer is essential to practicing Sabbath as well. Sabbath was meant to bring renewal and refreshing to you. Man wasn't created, human beings were not created to legalistically follow Sabbath. Sabbath was created to bring renewal and refreshing into our lives as people who go through our lives and have different things that wear us down. And we absolutely need that day, that time of renewal and restoration before our Creator King. God is your Creator. He's your manufacturer, if you like. He's built this into the very fabric of your being. And He invites you to experience renewal and restoration, refreshment through the practice of Sabbath. Jesus invites you to experience life like you've never experienced it before. He speaks of it as an abundant life or a fullness of life. I sincerely believe that to experience the fullness of life that Jesus has for us, this aspect of Sabbath is something that is vitally important. And our experience of the life that Jesus offers will continually fall short of what it could be when we don't enter into that experience. So my hope and prayer is that whatever we've talked about here today would at least stir in your heart a desire to experience something more than what you're experiencing right now in life. And that it would stir in your heart a desire to do so in such a way that you plan and make some kind of plan to at least give it a try. Like anything else that we try for the first time, often it doesn't work out really great. You know, sometimes, in fact, it doesn't work out good at all. I have sleep apnea. And while I kind of fallen off by the wayside here, I do have a sleep machine that I'm supposed to be using at night to help me breathe, actually to keep me breathing in many ways. And you know, the first month or two when I first started getting that machine, I had the worst, crappiest sleep of my life because I had to learn how to sleep with this mask on. But once I got used to it and began to have a better sleep and was able to go into a deeper sleep than I'd ever had before, I began to feel rested. And I think our practice of Sabbath is like that way. Especially for those of you who are doers, you're constantly active, you can't sit still for a minute. It's going to take a little bit of doing to get you to settle down, to wind down, and to actually take even a few hours and do nothing. Sit idle. Take your favorite beverage and sit outside and enjoy the outdoors, but do nothing. But I believe as you practice that it will make a difference in your life. And I believe as we practice Sabbath, we'll come into this fresh experience of God's tremendous love for us. And that's the one thing that He would always want you to know, is that He loves you. And we'd experience the renewing and refreshing of His Holy Spirit working in us. And we'd begin to experience what it means to live out the presence of Jesus in our everyday lives. May that be your experience this week. Go in peace.